From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Pittsburgh, California.
Oh, I'm not from the Bay Area.
Pinole, California.
San Jose.
I'm from Paradise, California, up north.
San Jose. South San Jose.
Coming up, we conclude our series on the diary of first-year teacher Diana Arbus.
I know I'm not yet a strong teacher. I'm just a student teacher who survived.
Then a high schooler laments the descent of hip-hop.
Violence is glorified, and kids don't strive to be doctors or lawyers, but strapped and slingin'.
And what's this sound?
All right.
Take a guess. We'll have the answer to this week's mystery sound from Audiograph coming up today on Cross Currents. Today's the last day of school for students in the Oakland Unified School District, including these two students from Oakland High School.
My name is Frank Alfaro.
My name is Javier Valdez, and we out this thing.
Class of 2013 out here, you know, just graduated, came back to Ohio to pick up my diploma, so it's official. Yeah.
Yeah, we about to go to college now. I'm about to go to Merritt, and he about to go
to East Bay, major in nursing, become the next nurse, the best nurse.
I'm undecided, but I'm hoping to, get my things together and play soccer out there.
It marks the end of a long year for student teacher Diana Arbus. We've been listening to her radio diaries all week as she struggled with classroom management.
When you've got what feels like 35 kids bouncing off the walls, being loud and disrespectful, not sitting where they're supposed to sit, it's really hard not to sink to their level and lose your mind and scream.
But she's also learned to take care of herself so she could help her ninth graders beat the odds of passing her class.
This is the beginning of high school. It's not the end of it. And we have to work. We have to catch up because there's too much at stake.
Now it's time to say goodbye to her students. We've got the final chapter in our series as Diana recounts the final weeks of school and her kids finish reading Romeo and Juliet.
It's Wednesday, May 29. Today we began talking about Act 4.
The themes are definitely themes that the kids can connect with, like rebellion from parents, young love, passionate love, violence. But it's just, there was this language standing in the way, and they couldn't, reading it in class just didn't work. It didn't work. It was just so boring for me and for them. So the curriculum guidebook that I was working with was very much about experiencing Shakespeare by doing Shakespeare, performing Shakespeare.
It's Thursday, June 6, about 12:15 p.m. Today, we rehearsed our Romeo and Juliet scenes, and there's some exciting stuff going on. I glanced over at one group, and they're doing Act 3, Scene 1, where Tybalt and Mercutio both die.
Tybalt! You rat catcher!
What must thou have with me?
There were certain students who just were really into it. They were so into the acting. And that was really cute to see. It is so adorable to watch these kids try these horrible British accents. We had sword fights in the classroom at the appropriate moments, and I think the yardstick was definitely used, and I'd have to break up certain fights because they went on way too long and got a little too rambunctious and a little too real.
A plague on both your houses!
I said, okay, and scene,
It's Saturday, June 8th. Yesterday was good, and oh my gosh, I feel like I kind of have the hang of it. But the last day is on Monday. We also have some goodbyes. Well, I was reflecting on this with my CT the other day. How do teachers say goodbye to their students at the end of the school year? I want to say goodbye. This is a special class. I hope most of them show up. I know, like, a couple, 2-3 students haven't been showing up. I haven't seen them this marking period. And the other one, she ran away from her group home, it sounded like. She seemed like a really, like, nice person. I don't know. But I don't think she's going to show up on Monday.
I think what a lot of this year has been about is just living in contradiction and being comfortable with uncertainty and questions. That's what I continue to realize is there's so much I don't know. And I would be a better teacher if I continue to educate myself about these larger things that I'm a part of. I'm Filipino. I'm Filipino American, and here I am, like a person of color, teaching the colonial powers language to other students of color. And I was just so troubled by that. Like, what am I doing? What am I participating in? It's so important for us to know English, to know academic English, which is the language of power. We all need to know this in order to navigate this world with empowerment and agency. But what I would love to do is figure out how to teach that without erasing the strengths that their homes and families have already. Can we do both? So the lessons I've learned, I would say that it's so important to take care of yourself, to be strong in your personal life, happy and healthy, so that you can be strong at work. And another lesson I've learned was you need to lean on the people around you. Teaching is too hard to do by yourself. It's too hard. Who thought up these movies with these teachers as Jesus Christ? Like, no, that's not what happens. That's not what happens. I had my CT the entire time. She was my, I don't want to call her my training wheels because she's a human being. But I'm going to miss talking to her every day.
It's Monday, June 10, 9 p.m. Today was my last day with the kids. My last day. I was not prepared for it. I mean, I was. I knew it was coming in this distant, intellectual way, right? But it just came so quickly and yet not soon enough. It was a celebration of all the hard work that we've done, but I guess they were definitely restless and ready for summer. They have been for weeks, and I was just so tired. But they did something for me, and it was so sweet. I thought I was going to cry in there. One student pulled out a poster. I have it right here, this poster. She rolled it out and she said, "Miss Arbus, this was my idea." She made it a big point to tell me that. And I didn't know what to say. I'm so uncomfortable with goodbyes, I guess. I should have hugged her or something, right? But I got emotional and I was no longer Miss Arbus. I was just this terribly insecure student teacher who was just astonished that the kids thought I did okay. "Hi, Ms. Arbus. I'm just reading their words. You are the first Filipino teacher I had in the U.S. And I'm so glad you taught us Romeo and Juliet anyways. This other student, I'm gonna miss you, girl." That's how you talk to a teacher. "You were the best teacher." Really, guys? Really? This one student, "Thanks for teaching yous." I think he meant us. These are funny notes to an English teacher, guys. I'm going to be a better teacher to future students. But I know I'm not yet a strong teacher. I'm just a student teacher who survived. It's funny because I left the classroom and one student said, "Don't forget me." I can't forget her. I can't forget any of them. They're my first students. My first ones.
Diana's teacher diaries were produced by Martina Castro with help from Alyssa Kapnick. They were edited by Casey Miner. Thanks to Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Maya DePaulahanica, Mary Willis, and Karen Gordon for recording and transcribing. And a very special thank you to Diana Arbus and Oakland High School. You can find the series online at KALW.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Here on the show, we like to take you deep into the lives, minds, and passions of people you may never get to meet. For instance, our ongoing project, My Mixtape, lets people from around the Bay tell stories about music that's meaningful to them.
My name is Tania Pulido. I live in San Pablo.
Hi, I'm Roman Mars.
My name is Nato Green.
And the song I want to share with you is Changes from Tupac.
And my song is At the Movies by the Bad Brains.
My song is I Will Refuse by the band Palehead.
My name is Ed Lee. I'm Mayor San Francisco, and I live in the Glen Park District. And my favorite song for a long time has been Let's Stay Together by Al Green.
I'm so...
For some, music is a source of inspiration and even guidance. For others, it may be the beginning of a potential career path. In these next two commentaries, two high school students from the Ruth Asawa School of the Arts in San Francisco explore the significance of music in their lives in a bit more depth.
My name is Jules Cunningham. I'm 17, and I'm not going to college. I'm going to be a singer-songwriter, and like many artists before me, I'm thinking where I'm going to learn the most as a writer is the real world. As my junior year in high school crawls to an end, and the sick dog of independent living rears its snout, I watch bags form under my fellow students' eyes as they stay late for four-hour SAT prep classes, or lose sleep looking up the right college with the right status with the right connections so they can get the right job to have the right house, and then have a family and live right until retirement. Maybe this wouldn't be so disconcerting if I went to a normal high school, but I go to Ruth Asawa School of the Arts, the only visual and performing arts specialty high school in San Francisco. There are fields, like classical music, where if you get into a conservatory and work hard, you can get into a good orchestra and climb an established ladder. But for many of us, particularly writers, visual arts kids, and actors, our art isn't worth going to college for. If there was a college course that taught you how to make it big in the publishing world, or how to become a famous actor or songwriter, everyone would be a major artist. But there's not. I want to be a professional songwriter and performer, but every college I look at either has songwriting as a one-year major or a major that should be renamed How to Kill Your Love of Songwriting 101. I have a hard time seeing why I should spend $30,000 a year for a little bit of songwriting, in addition to a bunch of academics I don't care about, when I could just as easily spend 4 years writing songs while working a job somewhere. I'd be making money and doing what I love, and I'll have at least the same chances of making it as someone going to college for songwriting. Even if those chances are slim, I figure they get better and better the more of your life you devote to your art. In the culture I've grown up in, it seems like going to college is just something you do, not because you want to or because you have something you're passionate about, but because everyone's told you from day one that you have to. And for a lot of people, college is a way out of their situation and a way to help themselves and their families. It also provides a backup plan, something you hear constantly when you tell someone you want to be an artist. Oh, that's nice, but you should go to college for engineering so you have a fallback. I'm not here to say you shouldn't go to college. I just think that oftentimes it does more harm than good. In a country where the national dropout rate is 60%, where student loans put people into crippling debt for the rest of their lives, and the economy is so up in the air right now that a degree isn't a guarantee of anything, I have to think, do I want to spend my time endlessly prepping to maybe do what makes me happy? Or do I want to spend it doing what makes me happy?
Hey, little lady, what you got up your sleeve? Gotta wait in my step, I'm looking for some relief.
My name is Hosanna Rubio, and I am 17 years old. Hip-hop is supposed to be poetry and activism.
With all the sex and stressing, the question I wonder is after death, after my last breath, when will I finally get to rest through this suppression? They punish the people that's asking questions and don't...
It seems as if many of the hip-hop artists have forgotten the activism-based roots of hip-hop. Roots that were conscious of the law-shackled past, the change-bound present, and the always hopeful future. Right now, the world of hip-hop is just a bunch of homophobic, misogynistic puppets controlled by big ballin' companies and corporations. No longer is hip-hop a child of the 70s disco era, or a way to tighten the historically damaged black community. I myself begin to wonder how Tupac, the best rapper who ever existed, would feel about the condition of hip-hop.
If we do want to live a thug life and a gangster life and all of that, okay, so stop being cowards and let's have a revolution. But we don't want to do that.
He died back in 96, which coincidentally, or not, seemed to be the death of hip-hop. All today's rappers talk about is how many b****s they have, how big their junk is, how much money they have, and how they're living large in the hood. What does this do? Some men put on this phobic, tough guy persona all rappers wear, and then boom, there goes another statistic and another stereotype. Wham! Young women see themselves as sexual objects that are not self-empowered, but instead are controlled. Whom? Violence is glorified, and kids don't strive to be doctors or lawyers, but strapped and slinging. Bands will make her dance. All these jeans popping, I'm just popping bang. Bands will make her dance. And the other listeners of hip-hop, who listen to hip-hop to be cool or as an act of rebellion, well, because most rap artists are black and the women being called b**** and hoes in the videos are black, their idea of ghetto becomes not just a place, but a group of people. What it means to be black is determined by how you dress, how you speak, and where you live. This would mean that besides my brown skin tone, I am not black. I have to dig deep to find hip-hop that is somewhat clear of these things. This means no radio, just mix CDs, and spending Saturday afternoons looking up underground rappers like Fashawn and Evidence. This means hoping and praying that quality, mainstream rappers like J. Cole don't fall into the raft of toxic puppets. He reaches out to his listeners, like me, and crushes a lot of hip-hop stereotypes. I like how he talks about being mixed, like myself, the condition of the black community, showing consciousness, and single-parent living situations, also like myself. He makes hip-hop relatable again, just how it began. Got me feeling like a job interviewing here. They asking questions about a five-year plan. She's saying who I'm fooling, they could never understand. They could never understand. J. Cole and a small but growing community of other rappers like Fashawn, Blue, and Common recreate hip-hop without even knowing how much of a difference they make.
Those are students Jules Cunningham and Hosanna Rubio of Ruth Asawa School of the Arts in San Francisco. Their commentaries were produced by Maya Ip with help from Alyssa Kapnick and Casey Miner. And we've got one final commentary for you today. This one from comedian Will Durst, who's decided to make his feelings about the National Security Administration publicly known. Although it's possible the NSA knows them already.
Hey guys, Will Durst here with a few choice words on the revelation that the National Security Agency is monitoring pretty much everything we say all the time. And to be perfectly honest, anybody who didn't already suspect this kind of snooping was going on is not to be trusted with knives in the kitchen without the protection of a fencing mask. Privacy is so 20th century. Unfortunately, while testifying in front of Congress, the NSA insisted that no, they aren't collecting data on Americans, when what they really meant to say is yes, they are collecting data on Americans. Confused by the question is all. Spokesman James Clapper claims he gave the least untruthful answer possible. Just a twist of fate that the least untruthful answer is identical to a bald-faced lie. Then again, even Congress knows that getting a straight answer from these guys is harder than bending a wire coat hanger into a number representing pi to the sixth digit with your teeth. See, the problem is nobody knows who the enemy is anymore. For all our government knows, it could be you or me. Mostly you. Narrowing suspicion is too time-consuming. Much easier to wiretap the entire nation than trying to pick out one or two of us. And what's more democratic than spying on everybody? The process is called data mining, and we, the soft quarry, are producing up to a billion records a day, which is real similar to pulverizing Everest, then sifting through the rubble for the blue pebble. They say we have no reason to worry because even though they're monitoring everything, nobody's actually listening to it. They just like to collect stuff. So this whole thing is just an extra long government-subsidized episode of Hoarders. Besides, the Constitution only safeguards us from unreasonable searches. Considering today's technology, that only protects the dead.
That's comedian Will Durst, whose views don't necessarily reflect those of KALW. If you'd like to hear more of what he has to say, you can check out his current show at the Marsh Theater in San Francisco. It's called Boomeraging from LSD to OMG, and he'll be performing the next two Tuesday nights. Find the details at KALW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. All week long on KALW, we've been playing you this sound. We asked what you think it is and where in the Bay Area it's from. KALW's Audrey Dilling brings you the answer. And a special note to KALW announcer Joe Burke, this one's for you.
A couple of weeks ago, I got sent on a special mission for KALW. It started in this echoey hallway.
It's about 3 o'clock on a Thursday afternoon, and I'm standing outside the media interview room.
When I finished with my interview, the PR rep asked me if I'd gotten everything I needed. I had. But before I could answer, she told me that I might want to go outside. I came to a gate that led to a baseball field. The man guarding it told me I wasn't allowed to go onto the grass, but I could talk to anyone who stepped off of it. So I waited. It was kind of like how in the movie Field of Dreams, the players only became real when they stepped out of the cornfield. Except in this case, Kevin Costner only really recognized about half of them and was secretly afraid he was going to call someone by the wrong name. Finally, someone I recognized. He set one foot in the dirt by the dugout and then another. I was allowed to talk to him now, but I didn't know what to say. Eventually, I went up to him and told him about this game we had called
Audiograph, and it's about the sonic signature of the Bay Area.
So I explained it really fast.
And there's this game where we play the sounds of the field on the radio, and then we have people call in and guess, and then somebody reveals the answer. And okay. I want to know if you want to be the person to reveal the answer. So
which brings us to this week's answer to the Audiograph game.
All right. This is Matt Cain, and we are at AT&T Park. Right now, it looks like guys are just getting ready for batting practice, and that's really what guys are doing right now.
Thanks to special guest contributor and San Francisco Giant Matt Cain for that answer. We got a lot of calls on this one, but there can only be one winner, and here he is.
Hi, my name is Richard Goldman. It's the AT&T ballpark, or as I like to call it, the Giants ballpark. Beautiful sound of baseballs being hit over the water and seagulls circling over the park, and the Let's Go Giants organ in the background. Let's Go Giants. 1 year anniversary today of the perfect Matt Cain game.
On the ground, Arias from deep third, got him! And that's a perfect game! And the Giants mobbing Matt Cain on the pitcher's mound.
Okay, go Giants.
Congratulations, we're sending you a KALW t-shirt. For the rest of you, there'll be another contest next week. Go to KALW.org to hear more from Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. And that does it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Julie Kane, Lisa Carmack, Marco Choi, Ben DeLuca, Audrey Dilling, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Daphne Matsiaraki, Megan Quintana, Christian Rose, Seth Samuels, Stephen Short, Eva Sonsa, and Ben Vu. The show is engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Our executive editor is Ben Trefney. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio. Yep, that's vintage jazz you're hearing, but nope, your radio hasn't gone into a time warp. You're hearing the Cottontails of San Francisco, a group that plays American music from the 20s to the 60s, sometimes all in one set. They'll be shaking it up on Sunday at the Riptide in San Francisco's Outer Sunset. Show starts at 7:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.